darlings and Bobolas. Nice to be back with all of you. Last time we spoke, I was on my way to Davos for the World Economic Forum. That was great. I'm back. I wrote quite a bit about it while I was there, sort of daily dispatches while I was there, talked about the experience. But today we can talk some more about what that was like and what I thought of it. But lots of other things to talk about. The Super Bowl is coming up soon. This coming weekend is the Super Bowl, and we've got the Eagles and the Chiefs. Why is it that for a long time there weren't black quarterbacks? There were only white quarterbacks for a long time. I mean, there was a couple. There was like an exception, right? Randall Cunningham, I guess, or Warren Moon. But like, there weren't a lot of black quarterbacks. There were only white quarterbacks. And now we've got a Super Bowl with two black quarterbacks. Was this like something discriminatory? Because there were a lot of other black NFL players. So what? Why weren't they quarterbacks? They were receivers. Like, is there some reason why blacks make better receivers than quarterbacks? I mean, even still to this day, I think there's a lot more white quarterbacks than black ones. Like, I, there's this allegation that like the NFL discriminates broadly because there aren't a lot of black head coaches. And that makes sense. I don't see any reason why like a white person would be better at being a head coach than a black person. But I'm curious, is there some reason why for certain positions, like tight ends are mostly white, offensive linemen are mostly white, defensive linemen are mostly black, most running backs are black. Like, just how come? It's weird to me that that's the case. So I'm curious what the reason is. I'd love some theories about that. But yeah, the Super Bowl is coming up. The Eagles are representing the NFC. It was offensive to me that last week when the Eagles won the NFC championship, that the Empire State Building was lit up in green lights for the Eagles. I mean, the Empire State Building, the symbol of New York City, was lit up for the Eagles. I would be just as offended if they lit it up in red and white if the Red Sox won. Like, that's just, it's offensive. It's weird. Why would you do that? There are plenty of shitty buildings in Philadelphia that you can light up for the Eagles. I don't get it. Why they did that. So yeah, you know, it's the Super Bowl is always like sort of a strange thing to watch because it feels like a spectacle, not like a real football game, right? The fans are mostly like corporate people and guys who are there for the parties. It's not like the real football fans that are there. But it's still, you know, look, I'll watch it. It's fun to watch. Next weekend, I might be a little late for the Super Bowl because I'm taking a class in stand-up comedy, which is something that for years people have told me I should do stand-up or I should be an actor. And I've never pursued it in any way. And a close friend and listener of the show encouraged me to do it. And so I'm doing it. I'm taking a stand-up class. I'm four classes into it. We have one more class tomorrow night at which I will rehearse my final routine. And then we have a performance next weekend. And in a comedy club, at the Comedy Cellar, I'm going to go and do my stand-up routine at the Comedy Cellar. How fucking cool is that? I'm like, besides myself with excitement, I have 5 minutes to do my routine. And each week for the class, we have to come in with usually 10 minutes of fresh material. So I've got like roughly 40 minutes of material to pick from to put together a super tight 5 minute set. It's hard because I think my natural way of communicating is to tell stories. And when I tell stories, I want to bring as much color and detail into the stories to bring it to life. Who are the characters? Set the scene. And when I'm, you know, on a podcast, I can do that. If I had a 1 hour stand-up special, I can do that. But when you have 5 minutes, you can't do that. When you have 5 minutes, you got to amp up the jokes per minute, the laughs per minute. You got to get that much higher. And if you're going to tell a story, you have to pepper it with jokes throughout. It can't just be a story with a funny punchline. And so I'm really being forced to change the way that I tell stories, the way that I tell jokes. It's not even how I naturally think. And I'm not sure I'm that good at it. We'll find out. But I'm enjoying the class a ton. The teacher is incredible. Her name is Veronica. She is, you know, everyone in the class shows up with like 10 minutes of material and we do our bits. And then she provides real-time feedback on how to tighten it up, turn it into jokes. Like, she's great at editing and providing that feedback. It's a very valuable skill. I don't have that skill. Like I said, you know, like I naturally want to communicate in a different way. So I need that help. But yeah, I've got some decent jokes. I'm not going to do the full stand-up routine here. But you know, there's like a whole thing about the best burger in town is at the Holocaust Museum. And like someone asks me for a recommendation and then I'm like, you know, go to the Holocaust Museum for the burger. And then I feel like really weird recommending it for that reason. I thought a decent premise for a joke, but no, it's mostly not Holocaust jokes. Cause those don't go over. So, I mean, it depends on your audience, I guess. So I'm excited for that. It's next weekend. Wish me luck. Hopefully I won't screw it up. Hopefully I won't get nervous or something and mess it up. I think there's going to be a video of the performance, which I'm excited for. So yeah, that should be kind of cool. It's interesting. You know, there's 10 people in the class and hopefully none of the other people in the class are listening to this. I mean, I hope they're listening because I want lots of people to listen, but hopefully they're not. I don't think they're that funny. I've laughed like once from what someone else in the class has said. Yeah, hopefully that like sets the stage and then I can get up there and just kill it. I feel like I need to go, not first, there's 10 of us in the class. Maybe I need to go like second or third, right? Have a couple of people who are like a little slow and then I can get up there and kill. And then, you know, everyone's going to laugh. And then after me, après moi le déluge. I think that's fine. So yeah, I'm excited about it, but we'll be a little late watching the Super Bowl. So yeah, Davos was great. I had excellent meetings. I went a few days early. I had some meetings in Zurich before Davos. Zurich's a fun city. I've been there many times. I used to have this like fantasy of moving there, and I think it is a great place. I think it would probably get a little boring. It would probably feel a little small if I lived there, but it's a very cool place. And had a nice time there. And then Davos is it's everything I expected and then some. You know, this was my third time going. And as I mentioned beforehand, so you know, the World Economic Forum is an interesting event because there is the official WEF, as it's called, is held in a tent or a giant building, I should say, in Davos. And Davos is just like a regular ski town. There's one main drag called the Promenade, and there's this giant building at the end of it, and that's where the official WEF is. But like, that's not where the action is. The action is on the Promenade. And you don't need to be an official attendee to be able to attend the events on the Promenade. You just need to RSVP for those events. And so this year, I did a really good job of RSVPing for stuff in advance, having a very full schedule, a guest list of, you know, on the guest list for a ton of things that I wanted to do, and made the most of it, made great contacts, met interesting people, went to a couple of good parties. One firm hired the DJ Cascade to come and DJ a party for them. Yeah, I mean, great. Like, if you have so much money and you want to burn it on Cascade, fine. Another firm, this was a weird one. So you know how like there's office buildings and apartment buildings in New York that are called like Trump this, Trump Tower, Trump Plaza. It's not like Donald Trump is the developer who goes and builds those, right? There's some developer who just pays the Trump Organization a licensing fee to put his name on the side because that presumably attracts like premium pricing. I don't know who's paying premium pricing for that, right? I don't know who is like, oh, yeah, a shitty apartment, but it says Trump on the side. Let's pay 20% more. I never understood that because they are shitty apartments. They're really lousy places made as cheaply as possible. So I don't get the appeal. But yeah, that's like their business model. Well, I guess Forbes is now doing that, right? Like Forbes, the guys who put together the list of the richest people in the world. And so they threw a party in Davos, which was one of the weirdest events. It was huge. They must have spent millions on this party. And it was to celebrate that there's an office building in Egypt, in Cairo, that's called the Forbes Tower. But like, who cares? It's like, no one at that party was like, oh shit, awesome, let me go rent an office in Cairo. Like, what are you doing having a party in Davos because you opened a new office? And like spending millions. They had Fat Joe fly in to perform. They had Dougie Fresh fly in to perform. Fat Joe, by the way, rapper from like the early 2000s, he could barely talk. He had no voice. His DJ did most of the work. He occasionally spoke, but I think his microphone was turned all the way down because he sounded horrible. He looks horrible. They were like two of the worst performers possible. But they flew these guys in. Fat Joe, by the way, that's 500 grand. I checked. That's 500 grand to get Fat Joe. They flew these guys in to perform. They had a huge party, all these speakers and events, and to celebrate that there's a new office building, which they didn't even show. They just showed like a rendering of it. There's a new office building in Cairo called the Forbes Tower. But who gives a shit? That was a super weird one. I mean, like, it was a fun party, but it was a super weird event. But I saw interesting people. I saw the CEO of Pfizer gave a talk, a small event hosted by Wall Street Journal. And he talked about, you know, they've got 20 new vaccines to jab you with in the coming year. So lucky us. It was interesting. He got like sort of badgered while walking along the promenade by a couple of independent journalists. And there's video of it on YouTube. It's definitely worth looking it up because they just asked him questions relentlessly about one interesting topic. When did you know that the COVID vaccine does not prevent transmission? And did you keep that information from the American public? Because that's a really interesting question. If the whole narrative was you have to get vaccinated because even if you're not really at risk, you need to get vaccinated to save grandma and grandpa and those who are, quote, immunocompromised, whatever the fuck that means. If the vaccine does not prevent transmission, which we all know it doesn't, right? Because everybody's vaxxed and COVID still goes around and everybody's catching it. So it's not preventing transmission. And if they knew that and didn't tell people, did they only do that because they liked selling the shots? It's a really good question. It's a question that deserves an answer. It's a question, frankly, that the Wall Street Journal should have been asking him. Right? Why does it take some renegade guy on the street badgering him to ask that question? Why isn't the Wall Street Journal asking that question? Because it's an important one. Why are the mainstream media outlets not asking that question? Why is it still considered taboo? COVID's in the rearview mirror. Why is that still considered taboo? It's a question that merits an answer. You know, the Biden administration said that they're ending the COVID emergency status or state of emergency or whatever in May. Like, if you know it's going to end in May, you can end it now, right? An emergency, if you know the end date of an emergency, then you've reached the end of the emergency. So why is it May? Why isn't it today? I don't quite understand that. But I think they like operating in this emergency status. It provides a little more flexibility in funding. They can get away with more bullshit. I mean, it's silly. COVID's in the rearview mirror now. We all know that. Who else did I see in Davos? I saw Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft. What he said was kind of bland. He was sort of talking his book, you know, just saying the stuff that's kind of beneficial to the company. I didn't think that was so meaningful. I think the best speaker, the most interesting speaker that I saw in Davos was when I went to see Oliver Stone having a conversation with the European editor of Politico. And so Oliver Stone, first of all, let me give you a little background. Oliver Stone is probably my favorite movie director. That started when I was in fourth grade, when my uncle took me to see the movie JFK, which sparked my interest in conspiracy theories. It sparked my interest in cover-ups and in a lot of different things. So I went to see JFK. You know, after that, like I was in fourth grade and we were learning nonfiction writing in school. And one day we had to brainstorm topics to talk about. Everyone's like, you know, going to write about their vacation or something. And I was, the only topic I wanted to write about was who really killed JFK. But there's a lot of Oliver Stone movies that I love. Wall Street was so influential for me. And one of my favorite movies ever. I love Natural Born Killers. I mean, the guy is a master. Any Given Sunday, Snowden. If you have not seen Snowden, you should go see Snowden right away, because that is a great film with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. It's all about how he got the information out, broke the story through Glenn Greenwald. One of the most important journalistic scoops of the 21st century, if not the most important. Great film. Oliver Stone understands cover-ups and conspiracies, and he makes great movies about that subject. His new one is about a topic that is near and dear to my heart. It's something that we have talked about on this podcast for a long time. It's something that arguably is the topic we've talked about the most, which is the way that countries have shut down their nuclear power industries at the urging of the traditional energy industry. The oil and gas companies have funded, and state actors that benefit from oil and gas have funded massive lobbying efforts to create an impression that nuclear power is dangerous, that nuclear power is somehow equal to nuclear war. And so countries have sacrificed their energy independence, most recently Germany, but it's happening in the US, it's happening in Japan. These countries have sacrificed their energy independence because of this fake fear of nuclear power. And there is a professor at American University who wrote a book about this topic. And Oliver Stone read the book and then was so captivated that he made a movie about it. And so the two of them were on a stage in Davos talking about this new movie. Now, a couple things that were very interesting to me. Number one, Oliver Stone is clearly the director and not the star. Even on the stage, Oliver Stone was mic'd up, but he didn't talk very much. He just told this very engaging, very charismatic professor from American University what to say. He'd go, tell them about the thing. And then that guy would talk for a couple of minutes, and then Oliver Stone would say, now tell them about the other thing. And he would sort of prompt him, but he wasn't the star. He wasn't the center of attention. So I thought that was very interesting. I spoke to the author of that book that inspired him, and hopefully we're going to have him as a guest on the podcast. But that was really a great moment for me to see him speak, to meet him in person, to shake his hand and take a selfie. that that was probably the highlight for me, besides seeing Cascade and Fat Joe. But yeah, some great meetings, interesting people, interesting speakers. I snuck into some fun events. There's an event called the Swedish Lunch. It's one of the hottest tickets at Davos every year. It's a lunch meeting held at a mountain hotel. It's like up the mountain. You got to take a train up to the hotel. And they host this huge lunch meeting every year. It's gorgeous. They have great speakers. This year they had Tony Blair and the Prime Minister of Finland. I don't even remember her name. She's really pretty though. Sanna Marin. Sanna Marin. She's 37 years old. Incredible. So they had the two of them speaking. It's a super cool event. Very interesting. I had RSVP'd for it. I was not on the guest list. And I was going to try to sneak in with a friend who had like a VIP spot. And that didn't work out. So I get there and I know that I have a friend named Mauricio who's on the guest list. Now Mauricio gets in. He gives them his name. He says Mauricio and they let him right in. And then I go to the other security person and I say, hey, hi, I'm on the guest list, Mauricio Benavides. And they go, oh, sure, right here. And they just check my name off. And then I walked in. And then you take the train up the mountain and there was another person, another two people, thankfully, checking names. And Mauricio was there in line and I was there in line. So I went first. I went to the person on the right. I said, hi, I'm Mauricio Benavides. And they let me right in. Thankfully, Mauricio didn't know I was doing it. It might have made him a little uncomfortable. Then he got in through the person on the left and all was well. So that was one of many events that I walked into just telling them I'm Mauricio Benavides. It was successful. I think I might adopt that as like an alter ego now and just start referring to myself by that name because it helped a lot. So and he's a cool guy. I gave a talk in Davos. That was a lot of fun. It was something called an Ignite talk, which I guess is like a sort of variation on a TED talk, but with a very strict format. You have 5 minutes and you have to have slides. You have to have 20 slides. Each one is on the screen for 15 seconds and you don't control. It's automatic. So every 15 seconds, the slides advance, which means that each slide should have like three or four words on it or a picture. And you have to stay really tight. You got to talk fast and you got to stay tight. It's probably good practice and sort of a variation on what I'm doing for the stand-up class. So I gave an Ignite talk in Davos, should have video and pictures from that soon, about something that I talked about on the last podcast, which was obesity, the obesity epidemic, the prevalence of medications like Ozempic for treating obesity, and who deserves those medications. I gave a talk about this. I think it was very well received. It was interesting. You know, there were like a handful of people doing these Ignite talks. And what's cool about them, I guess, is that because you know they're only 5 minutes, if someone sucks, you can, you know, if you're sitting there for an hour and you're going to see 12 of them, if someone sucks, no big deal. 5 minutes, they'll be done. And if they're great, they can condense their message into 5 minutes, and that's fine too. So it was a cool format. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Very glad that I did that. And I felt like I got a lot out of honing my message that way and sharing it. So it's interesting. I'm experimenting a lot with different forms of communicating, whether it's stand up or this kind of talk that I did. I'll share a video of it on the Substack as soon as I have it. But that was very cool. Did not sleep much while I was there. Frankly, didn't eat very much while I was there. It's a little bit of like a physical endurance contest because, you know, you're going between the meetings and the parties and everything. Like it's kind of grueling, fun and interesting and valuable and worthwhile, but grueling.
The Vietnamese have more or less cornered the market on smoothies in New York City. They have this great business with those little carts. They buy fruit that's a couple days old. Maybe it's slightly bruised, but when you put it in a blender, no one can tell. So they buy a banana and an apple for a few pennies. They blend it. and then they sell it for $8. And that is a great business. Remember, like, drinking smoothies used to be considered like something that only fancy people do. Like, you'd be the butt of jokes because you wanted some blended fruit on the go. Well, no more. The solution is BlendJet 2. It's a portable blender that allows you to make smoothies at work, a protein shake at the gym, even at the beach. What? Blending at the beach? What is this? A blender at the gym? What? Anyways, BlendJet 2 is small enough to fit in a cup holder, but powerful enough to blast through ice and frozen fruit with ease. BlendJet 2 is whisper quiet, so you can make your morning smoothie without waking up the whole house. It lasts for 15-plus blends and recharges quickly via USB-C. Best of all, BlendJet 2 cleans itself. Just blend water with a drop of soap and you're good to go. With over 30-plus colors and patterns to choose from, there's a BlendJet 2 to complement just about any style. I rock the urban camo print because I'm a certified badass. What are you waiting for? Go to BlendJet.com and grab yours today. And be sure to use the promo code THELEESHOW12 to get 12% off your order and free two-day shipping. That's THELEESHOW and the numbers 1-2 to get 12% off your order and free two-day shipping.
I shared a room with this guy, Olaf. Olaf's a very nice guy. The Dalmatians that I was worried about that live in the apartment. So Olaf and I rented a room in this couple's apartment. They have two Dalmatians. Dalmatians, in my experience in the past, are the most wretched variety of dogs. They're violent and wild. These two weren't bad. They kept little bowls of doggy treats around the house that you could placate them with. One of them was like 15 years old and looked like it was about to die. And the other one was pretty docile anyways. So they were fine. They didn't bother me. They did get hair on everything, but they didn't bother me as much as I feared that they would. And it was nice hanging out with Olaf. His mattress, I don't know if I posted a picture on the Substack. His mattress was literally a cot on top of a cardboard box thing, like some corrugated cardboard apparatus. It looked shitty. It would have been better if they just put a mattress on the floor. The cardboard thing really did look quite shitty. But it was fine. Like, I wasn't there for luxury digs. I was there to have a place to sleep for a few hours every night, and it did the trick just fine. So, you know, Useful would happily go back in a heartbeat. I think it's a great event. If you're interested in it, if you're thinking about going next year, by all means, reach out. Let's talk about it. But yeah, now I'm back and very focused on stand-up comedy and cracking some jokes. I did a race this past weekend. I did a 10K in Central Park. It's a tricky race because Central Park is a lot hillier than people realize, but I did well. I shaved 38 seconds off of my 10K time compared to the race I did last month in Central Park. So I felt quite good about that. 7:35 minutes per mile pace overall, which that was a good race. At the end of the race, they give out, like, you know, Gatorade and water, and they have apples, and they always say, like, New York State apples. And I remember when I was a kid, there were three kinds of apples. There was Granny Smith, there was Red Delicious, and then occasionally there was Yellow Delicious. That was a little bit more obscure. Who the fuck likes Red Delicious apples? That's the worst kind of apples. Like, no contest. That is it's a terrible tasting kind of apples. But now, you don't see that anymore. Now it's every weird Honeycrisp, Makum, Fuji Makum, red Blush. Like, they all have different strange names. They're all sort of like hybrids of the red and green ones. When did that become a thing? When did apples become a genetic experiment instead of just the green and the red? I'm not complaining about it. These ones are much better than the old kind. But when we were growing up, apples were a very different thing than they were now. There's a new season of Fauda on TV. Fauda, if you haven't watched it, this is season 4. It's on Netflix. If you haven't watched seasons 1 through 3, you should. Fauda, I think, is... I mean, it feels like a little propaganda-ish. It's about these Israeli special forces guys who speak Arabic, and so they like infiltrate these Arabic, these Palestinian terrorist cells to try to prevent attacks. You know, I think there are only two groups that you can still stereotype on TV and just have like a trope, right? One of them is the Soviet spy, right? The Russians are here to spy. They're here to cause trouble. You can stereotype Russians on TV shows, especially now with the Ukraine war going on. You can say anything you want about the Russians. And believe me, no love lost here. I'm not a fan. I think they sow discord around the world. And I also went to Russia and thought it was horrible. But that's a common trope, is the Russian bad guys. It's always the Russians are the enemy. And the other one is Arabs, right? You can make a TV show where there's some sort of vaguely Middle Eastern or explicitly Middle Eastern Muslim-sounding name yelling Allahu Akbar and strapping on suicide vests and shit like that. It's a trope, but you can do it as much as you want, it seems, on TV, and you're not going to be called a racist. But I think if you just made a TV show right now where, like, there's some poor black people who are in a gang, that probably doesn't get greenlit by Netflix right now. I don't think that racial stereotype plays well right now, but you can, these are the racial stereotypes that you can still get away with. Right? Think back to 24. You remember that TV show 24? Where Jack Bauer is always saving the day from the Muslims who are trying to blow everything up. Homeland was another one. That was a good one. We've got Fauda. I mean, there's plenty of these shows. There's loads of these shows where it's always like the Muslims who are looking to blow things up. And maybe they are. Maybe it's like a stereotype grounded in reality. I don't know. They're not great friends to Israel. It's kind of fun watching these shows. Is that bad to say? No, but it really, it is. I think probably soon you can make Chinese stereotypes. That's probably going to become okay as conflict with China continues. You know, the Chinese had this spy balloon that they floated over the U.S. It was just this past week, the Chinese had a spy balloon over the U.S. And Americans have been captivated by this balloon. It was this giant balloon that was spotted by a passenger plane floating over the U.S. heading southeast from Montana. The media was obsessed with it. The Fox News crowd was using it as a way to criticize Biden and say that he was weak for not shooting it down. The Chinese government made the completely ridiculous explanation that it was a weather balloon that had wandered off course. This was not a mistake. Let's be real. This was not a mistake. I'm not sure that it matters. Right? The Chinese have spy satellites circling the Earth. If they want a picture of something, they can take a picture of something, and they don't need a fucking balloon to do it. And it's not a demonstration of advanced technology. It's not like, oh, wow, how impressive the Chinese mastered hot air balloons. I think the Chinese floated this to test the American response. Just as they fire missiles over Taiwan to be provocative and fly over the country, just as they skirmish with troops over the mountainous region of Ladakh in India, I think they are doing this to test the U.S. response, to be provocative and test that response. I think they've done this before. The Pentagon said that there were three of these during the Trump administration. That sounds right. Who knows? But I also think that, you know, this week, Anthony Blinken, the Secretary of State, was planning to go to China for a high-level visit. He was planning to meet with Xi Jinping. And one might argue that this was a sign that relations between the U.S. and China were thawing, that we were trying to achieve some sort of detente because things are tense right now. But with this balloon, Blinken has been pressured into canceling his trip. And so I have to ask the question, who benefits from him canceling? Who benefits from the Cold War being pushed? And when we think about it from that perspective, cui bono, who benefits? It's the military industry. And I use that term broadly. That's everyone from the Lockheed Martins and the Raytheons to the generals running the military to the number of jobs that are created by having a massive military and a massive military industry. They all benefit from this. They benefited from a 20-year pointless war in Afghanistan. And they hate Biden because he ended that war. And they tried to pressure him into keeping it going for years more, billions a month, to no end. But he got us out. And so then it's turned to some sort of idiotic narrative. Well, I'm glad he ended the war, but I don't like the way he did it because it seemed chaotic or something. Guys, who gives a fuck if he left some tanks on the ground? It doesn't matter. We spent like trillions on this war. You think that some jeeps and shit matter? Who cares? Ending a war isn't pretty. He ended a 20-year war. You think that's going to be a beautiful exercise? You think he's going to say like, okay, let's just lock up and buy? He got us out of the fucking war, and they tried to pressure him to keep it going, and he said no. Good for him. I think it's the best thing that Biden has done. It is a major accomplishment of his presidency. So then the new thing is we gotta throw money after Ukraine. Whether or not you think it's a good idea, without question, that military industry benefits from it. Right? It's the, you know, others have called it the military-industrial complex. I really think military industry is a cleaner term for it. It creates jobs. It creates demand where we go, oh, wow, you know, things are tense. We need more soldiers. The generals need more influence. We need more ships and guns and planes and bullshit. This industry does not want detente. They want conflict. If the Pentagon was worried, they could have destroyed this balloon quietly. They didn't need to announce this. But by doing so, they forced Blinken's hand. They threw a wedge between the U.S. and China, so he canceled the trip so that things don't thaw. And to be clear, I am not saying that the U.S. should have done nothing here. China is a provocative country. They are bullying, and it is vital that we push back. But you don't need to do that in the press. They shot the weather balloon down yesterday. There was video of an F-22 apparently fired one missile and shot it down. Right off the coast of South Carolina, over very shallow waters. Apparently they said they didn't want to do it over the U.S. because the debris could have hurt someone. I don't know if that's maybe. There's lots of not crowded parts of the U.S., so now they're going to recover this stuff. The Republican idiot machine is having a field day with this, talking about how it's a sign that he's weak because they waited until it had crossed the U.S. to shoot it down. Who cares? It didn't provide any sensitive intelligence. Like, be logical here. Who gives a shit? Who cares? So they shot it down and they'll recover it. I don't know. Okay, sure. I just don't buy into the narrative that America is so decadent and that we have become weak. Just the opposite. It is our tolerance of ideas, our tolerance of dissent, that makes us strong. We are not weak because there are like trans people in senior leadership positions. Just because Donald Trump Jr. wants you to think that, that doesn't make us weak. That makes us strong. It is diversity of ideas and people that make a huge benefit and a huge difference in this country. By the way, our military, let's set one thing straight. Our military is like 20 times stronger than China's. Who gives a shit about their fucking balloon? That's all we've got for today. I will keep you all updated on how the stand-up set goes. Wish me luck. And we'll be back with more soon.